It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. She's known as the trans handy ma'am on TikTok, and she has a big heart for renters because she is one. We welcome back Wisconsin's own Mercury Stardust and tackle things that need fixing, drains that need unclogging, and other helpful tips to make a home comfortable. Call in with a question. You can share comments along the way. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mercury Stardust is a professional home maintenance technician, performer, and activist. Her book is called Safe and Sound, A Renter-Friendly Guide to Home Repair. Mercury, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, hi. How's it going this morning?
It's going well. So glad you're here. And, you know, you think renters are overlooked in home maintenance. So why do you think renters get short shrift?
I think it's because we have this notion that if it isn't a property, we don't really have a say with it. And I think that that conversation right out of the gate is a very one that's filled with inequities. You know, I think that it's hard sometimes for people to understand why someone would want, you know, to have a say in their home, you know. And I think that the reason why we wrote the book was basically to start this conversation and to try to open up the gates a little bit when it comes to this information in our own homes.
Yeah, renters are often people who are viewed as lesser, you say, just because they're renters. They don't own that property. They don't own that land. And that has a ripple effect.
Yeah, and a lot of renters are also people who are in the LGBTQIA community or are in other marginalized communities. We have to look at renters not just as people who don't have a house, but often are people with other marginalized identities that might be affected when we're talking about the economic disparities in the country.
So you have what you call a checkity checklist. This checklist you should get from your landlord to document the state of your home when you move in. Why emphasize this documentation?
The more that we document everything from emails with our landlords and technicians, and the more that we document like what's already wrong when we move in, the more we're protected when we're moving out. Mm-hmm. So if we know, hey, you know, that base trim when in the kitchen is damaged, that we're not going to get charged for that when we're moving out of a rental. And those kind of things are super, super important when we're talking about just protecting our finances.
Mm-hmm. And you also recommend negotiating the lease through email. So a lot of digital documentation going on here.
Yeah, take photos of everything. Everything that you could document and put into like, you know, put into the cloud or put into Google Drives is all good. You know, we're in this wonderful time of almost too much information in the world. So I think it's good to just kind of like contribute to that and have that in your back pocket because we don't always remember what's wrong. And in the rule of court, we need to have evidence in order to support what our claims are.
How common is it for landlords to not return a renter's security deposit?
I think, you know, when it comes to how actually common, if I looked on data, I think the data would probably suggest that it leans on a side of more for the landlord and a little bit less for the tenant. But it's really hard to say that, you know, for sure without having a lot of data. And data is different for everyone across the whole country. Mm-hmm. I will say that the majority of renters feel like we don't get our deposits back. And the debate over what constitutes as not getting the deposit back and why is just one that's sometimes really hard to quantify. And we don't see a lot of renters take landlords to court because, I mean, it's really expensive to do so. And sometimes we're only arguing about like $400 or $500. And for a renter, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. For a landlord, that's a drop in the hat. So that could be really difficult for us to be able to get support from the court system.
And it's really, you know, in terms of damages, it's such, you know, the eye of the beholder. I mean, what is considered normal wear and tear and what is considered actual damage? It can be different for every eye.
It can also be different for how long you've lived there for. You know, like every passing year, we are dealing with more different kinds of normal wear and tear. If you've been there for 7 to 8 years, most carpets in, you know, in rentals don't last that well. You know, this is on the cheaper side sometimes. Sometimes you do run into some really nice carpet, but most of the time it's carpet that's going to wear out between 7 to 8 years. And if you've lived here for 10 years and your carpet is still immaculate, then why is it when you call for a new appliance, they push back against you? You know, like I think that we have such, you know, this tenuous situation between I need to make sure to protect myself financially because, you know, this isn't an investment for me. And then you see the other side where this is actually my shelter. This is how I stay warm in the winter. This is how I stay dry in the summer. And those two things feel very incompatible sometimes when we're having these disagreements and arguments.
Mercury Stardust, our guide to home maintenance, and has a new book out called Safe and Sound. You can join in the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Mercury, when you're deciding on a potential place to rent, you know, you mentioned about, of course, documentation, but you also like to know how long a typical tenant stays in the apartment. Why is that relevant?
That's a really good point. So when people are moving into a new place, knowing how long the previous tenant was there for is a great indication of like what's going on. I lived in about 8 different rental places in a course of about 10 years. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that, like, I couldn't get settled. It wasn't because I didn't want to stay there. It was because, oh, maybe it was too small, it didn't fit my needs, or I got pushback from the landlords, or felt uncomfortable with communication, or didn't feel safe with the landlord, didn't feel safe with the technicians. You know, there's so many lists of things. Finding a home, especially in the rental market, can be really hard when it comes to location, where your job is, to where your home is. So all of those factors go into how I am debating about living at a place. And one of the major ones is if that person who lived there prior to me lived there for like 2, 3, or 4 years, that might be an indication that it was at least a good enough a place to sign multiple years of leases for. The days where we could sign a 3-year lease are gone. Hmm. We live in an era right now where signing 1-year lease is kind of the standard almost everywhere across the country. And when we find a place where it's a monthly list, that's even more rare these days. So being able to know that the person signed multiple 1-year leases is a really good indication that this might be a place that you can at least settle in for the next couple of years.
Well, let's take a call now. Ethan is joining us from Whitewater. Ethan, hi, what's on your mind?
Hey, I was just curious. I know there's a lot of different information out there, but most leases that I've ever signed, the landlord will include something about carpet cleaning that must be done by a professional company. And like you said, you know, you can keep the carpet as clean as it can possibly be, but they'll still charge you for that. And then I've, in some cases, just seen them come in with a Stanley steamer or something that they told me I could not do.
Yeah, there is. So when people are moving out, especially, there is this notion within the industry in which I was in for 17 years that we want to make sure that we have evidence that things were done properly, right? And when we are paying someone for their service, instead of just relying on people to do the work themselves, that is more to protect us in a legal sense than it is to protect us in almost anywhere else. And, you know, we get a lot of pushback on this kind of stuff. Like people within the industry, when I mention this, get upset that that's how I view it. But I was in the industry for 17 years and I know the communication we had behind closed doors. And it was very much about like making sure we have a paper trail. Because as people who own the property, we can protect ourselves by making sure that we have a long, strong a paper trail. And if someone complains, oh, hey, the carpet doesn't look clean, we can be like, oh, actually, we did this about 3 to 5 weeks ago, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a way to just basically look good, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, carpet within the industry is such a standard to replace it after someone moves out that it's often kind of a chuckle when people live in a place for 3 to 4 years and them not replacing the carpets. These carpets don't hold up very well. They're very thin. They're usually corrugated carpet, which means that they pull apart at the seams. And it's not uncommon to go into a place and see several runs that are indications that this carpet may need to be replaced anyways.
Mercury Stardust is a professional home maintenance technician in Wisconsin. The guidebook to common repairs, it's called Safe and Sound. And you can join the conversation with a question. You can share your thoughts at any point. Call in at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here in the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, professional home maintenance technician in Wisconsin. Mercury Stardust is a lifelong renter, has a guidebook that is focused on renters and how to proactively fix dozens of home maintenance issues, along with tips on how to effectively communicate with a landlord. Be part of this discussion as Mercury troubleshoots. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mercury, you know, you've got these freshly painted walls as you move in. They're, you know, begging for something to be there to make it, you know, something that feels like home. And you write about using painter's tape as a way to help hang something on a wall. Can you explain this technique?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you got like a painting or you have something that has two holes in the back of it, if you put painter's tape on the back of it, and you mark off where the holes line up, and then take that painter's tape and put it in a level, and then mark it off on the wall using a level, mm-hmm. then boom, you got it. You know exactly where the holes are. You know exactly that it's level. And this can take less than a minute and a half to 2 minutes. It's so much faster than what I was taught when I was younger, and that was just to guess and pray.
And it's those little things, because when you walk by, it's straight and it's not, you know, hanging in an odd way that catches your eye. I mean, you want those little things to be just right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to
details.
Details matter. Let's go to Lanny in Ashland. Lanny, hi.
Well, hello. How are you guys?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't know. I'm a 72-year-old man, and I've owned a lot of property. I've owned a lot of rental property, and now I'm renting again, you know, in Ashland because I got rid of my big house. But I'd like to tell the viewers or the listeners that, you know, make sure you watch your P's and Q's when you live in a rental place. I mean, you know, if the carpet, maybe take some pictures before you move in, you know, how the place was, because at the end, you know, when you're moving out, you know, your mind's really not right there. You've got something else on concern. But I think, you know, proof is in the pudding. And the more notes you take and the more pictures you take, whatever, the more proof you have, you got something to stand on. That's basically all I got to say.
Oh, Lanny, know, thank you for that. Mercury, I think you'd probably say amen there.
Absolutely. Documentation is so important. And I think it's another important topic to talk about is a lot of people, when we are aging, find ourselves back in rental properties for the first time in sometimes many years. I did a 54-city book tour last year, and I met so many people. But the amount of people who I met that were seniors was a wild amount, not what I thought I would see from my demographic of listeners and followers. But there are a lot of people who are elderly who are now, in the first time in sometimes 40 to 50 years, are renters again. And it can be really a culture shock, especially when you're calling the shots for a long time. And all of a sudden, you're not. And I think that's another important topic to have when we're discussing these type of things.
Jerry in Verona called in and says that they believed Illinois might have had a renters union and people could call in, tell about their situation, and the union would negotiate on their behalf. And Jerry says it's a good idea to have that representation on both sides. What are your thoughts there?
In an ideal world, every single apartment complex and every single rental property would have a renters union. And it is, these are starting to become more and more popular. They can start by just one person in a complex saying, hey, if we all work together, we can make sure that our voices are heard. It is very difficult in the reality to get these started and to actually have them last. But I'm a huge advocate for it. I really do think there's a lot of landlords get very skittish around this idea. But I really do think it's beneficial for all of us to have open communication and all of us to have our voices heard. And also to understand that you may own the property, but these are people's homes. And they should have a say with what happens in their own community. Often landlords or technicians don't even live in the communities in which they're providing services for. And I think that could be a huge factor when we're talking about this. We need to better our communities, and we do that by giving each other voices.
Mercury Stardust with us, new guidebook out, professional home maintenance technician and focused on renters. You can call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Chris in Eau Claire is here. Chris, hi.
Hey. I'm doing pretty good. I was wondering, for that question about negotiating rental terms, would you know if there's a difference between family-run versus a corporate, I guess, rental provider, and if there are certain things you can or can't do in either case?
Such a good question. First and foremost, when we're talking about family-run property management companies, usually this means somewhere that's under like 10 properties. It can really range. Sometimes it's just one person in their basement, you know? But when you're dealing with that, you're going to be able to have a lot more leeway. It becomes way, way more individualized when we're talking about smaller property companies. When we're talking about corporate properties, it is a huge legal battle, right? They're dealing with hundreds, sometimes thousands of properties. And that means that they're going to have a lot less leeway. They might not be as willing to cut the corners on something because if they're doing it for one, it may open it up for hundreds. And that imbalance can be difficult to work with. So it's always good to ask the question, and it's always good to get it all in writing. But just know you may not hear what you want going in. And in the state of Wisconsin especially, we don't have a whole lot of leeway. It is more like a seller's market than it is a buyer's market in a lot of ways, right? Mm. It's harder for us to find properties right now in Wisconsin that fit our needs as renters than the other way around.
Thinking about how the management company might not even be in Wisconsin, and if there is an emergency, like let's say your apartment, your home is broken into, what should your landlord and you do? What should be, you know, how do you address a scary emergency?
Oh, the first thing I will say is that we should always have renter's insurance. I think that that's a huge part of it. When it comes to someone breaking into your apartment especially, one of the first things that we're going to ask from a property management standpoint is, you know, did the person have the key? Do you have all the keys? And we still might change the lock and all that anyways. And then we need to change the lock if we get a police report. So legally, I don't think I was allowed to do a lot of stuff unless there was a police report. So remember that even though sometimes we might not want to get the police involved for so many reasons, that legally we kind of have to have a paper trail in order to make sure we can get some jobs done. But when it comes to like our actual safety themselves, I talk to people about Google Homes, you know, having some type of security system set up with cameras is always good. I like to err on the side of caution. Be aware that in some leases, it does indicate that you're not allowed to put up cameras facing the entrance or the exits of your apartment unless you get permission from the property management company. So be aware that there are some tricky language when it comes to this stuff. But I believe that if you're a landlord, we should allow people to be able to protect themselves with the means that they have. And if they're not able to put a large permanent lock on the door, at the very least, let us use temporary devices to protect ourselves.
Mercury Stardust is a professional home maintenance technician in Wisconsin, author of a new guidebook on common fixes around the house. And you can join the discussion along the way. Call in with the question, add your home repair tips at any point. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss handy home repairs with Mercury Stardust, known as Trans Handy Ma'am on TikTok and a professional home maintenance technician in Wisconsin. New guidebook is focused on renter-friendly repairs. And we heard from Carol in Lake Geneva, former apartment manager, who says number one way to get your security deposit back, just clean the place, Carol says, including your oven. You can be part of the discussion on DIY fixes. Call in with the question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Let's go to another Carol. This is Carol in Milwaukee. Hi, go ahead.
Good morning. I would like to talk about Milwaukee's situation. There are not enough building inspectors. My building inspector told me, after he got through helping me for 3 months, it took him to get a total of 4 months before I got the squirrels out of my house, because my landlord didn't want to do it, get rid of them, it seemed like, because he could have gotten rid of the squirrels within 1 month. But anyway, I think he could have. But anyway, the building inspector told me, he was very nice and everything, but he said, we can't waste time on small issues like yours. Don't call again if you want to help the city, because the city has to take all these I think they're the new landlords who don't really live here, which is most of the rentals. We have to take them to court. They will not do anything when we give them reprimands. They wait to be taken to court. So I guess these building inspectors do not have time for all the problems in the city. That's my opinion.
Carol, thank you for bringing that to the table. Wasting time on small issues, but squirrels doesn't seem to me, Mercury Stardust, like a small issue.
See, what Carol was bringing up is actually a larger issue, and that's out-of-state landlords and the battles and illegal issues that we're having across the country. We've never seen it quite this way before. You know, we've always had out-of-state landlords at a pretty high rate across the country. It has increased quite a bit in the last couple of years. And it's made it really, really difficult for local registrations to be able to enforce the laws that they have. And so what you're hearing in this discussion is a complete exhaustion of the systems we have in place. I don't actually think squirrels is a small issue. I think that can lead to a very big issue. But I don't know all the issues that the inspector is seeing, right? I mean, they could be dealing with so many large, crazy issues that a squirrel living in your home may be a pretty small one to them. But to us, when we're living in the space, those kind of things can be so disruptive and add to a worsening life quality, right? So it can be difficult, but also understand that this is not the problem of the inspector. This is the problem of the landlord. But trying to get enforcers and support to take care of it, they've put a really hard strain on our system, and it shows.
Well, one of the tips you provide, I've even put it to work right away. When you do finally get that maintenance technician in your apartment, in your home, get their expertise while you have it. And I really love that advice. What more can you say there?
I think that a lot of times we can just watch them. We can be in their presence. We can, once we get a few couple of words from them, right? If they diagnose the problem, we're able to actually Google. We live in a world where if we have the right word choices and have the right knowledge on and what we're looking at, we can do a lot of the research. But often we don't even have the framework to Google, you know, the plumbing issue or the electrical issue or, you know, all those type of issues that we may have. But if we're able to just get a few keywords, maybe we can look it up in my book or look it up on Google. And that's a great start. I think that never be relaxed on trying to find information that may help you now or maybe 5 or 10 years down the road. You never know when information comes in handy.
And you have the Mercury method. It's, you know, to identify and tackle these difficult issues. Can you walk us through the Mercury method?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a firm believer that if we can troubleshoot things, if we can kind of look at problems, it doesn't necessarily matter if we are someone who is never done this repairs or not, because a lot of those things can be solved if we just kind of walk through our steps of figuring it out. One of the very first steps is about isolating the problem, right? We want to identify and then isolate the problem. Once we can kind of figure out how the problem is happening, like let's say for an instance we're dealing with a door not opening properly, right? Well, if we can isolate the problem and we can find out what is the issue, is it the hinge itself, the hinge rusted, is it beyond repair, do we need to replace it, or are we looking at maybe do we need to plane the top of the door, do we need to change the pins and the hinges? If we can isolate what is causing the problem itself, then we can actually implement. Then we can actually start working on the problem. And that's kind of what the Mercury method is. It's just a new way of looking at troubleshooting and kind of giving us various steps to kind of make sure that we can solve the problem itself.
And at the end of the method, you suggest that we breathe. And I'm wondering, you know, kind of taking stock, taking a moment, why are those emotional resets really important?
Studies have shown that when people are in emotional heightened states, that we don't take in or retain as much information. And I think when we are trying to educate ourselves, especially, it can be a really frustrating experience. Because we may mess up or we may not feel like we are adequate in order to do these jobs. But if we remind ourselves to breathe, to try to stay as calm as we possibly can, we actually retain and take in more information. And that can help us. And remember, we don't know what we don't know. Beating yourself up about something you did not know previously, to me, is really beneficial to learning and growing and taking care of ourselves.
Mercury Stardust, our guide to home maintenance technician. You can call in with your repair questions, comments, experiences, 800-642-1234. Key in Madison is here. Key, hi. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi, yes.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hi. Okay. So I live in an apartment building in Madison, and it's from the 1980s, and I've lived here 3 years, and I'm having recurring mold. And I know that the humidity is an issue, so I put on the heat light that's on the ceiling, and then I put on the Brone, what they call an exhaust fan, which is on the wall. And, well, while the maintenance person was here fixing the Johnny ring in the toilet, I asked him about it, and he said, because the fan is blowing in, like I put a lighter up there once, and it just blew the light, it blew the flame out. And he said, oh, well, that's not vented to the outdoors. That doesn't do anything. That's supposed to blow in. And I really felt like I was being gaslighted. And I really appreciate what you just said about not being able to take in and retain information when you have a heightened sense of this. And that's how I feel when the maintenance person comes over.
Yeah, it could be really hard, right? Like when we're talking to maintenance technicians, it can be really difficult because there's a power dynamic that they might not even be aware of. A lot of technicians, you know, we clock in, we clock out, and we're almost detached from what the realities are for the people who are living there. And I think that we don't talk about it enough in our industry about how we're dealing. These are really important jobs. And many of us in the industry are considered, you know, emergency workers in some ways. A lot, like I was an emergency call often, and I would show up people's houses at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning at very difficult times. And I think we need to have empathy and compassion for those moments. But to help with the molding issue.
Meanwhile, the mold.
I think it's really important to talk about dehumidifiers, especially in bathrooms. So you're not alone, Key. In the state of Wisconsin, when it comes to bathrooms having the proper exhaust systems, it can be actually kind of an uphill battle. A lot of these places were ushered in before certain codes kind of came in. So they're kind of protected underneath the law. You know, they don't necessarily have to make them as airflowy as they should, right? But dehumidifiers can be a huge asset. They're going to make sure that moisture is being sucked out while it's happening. And that's a good thing. Okay. So I always think of dehumidifiers being applied 20 minutes before a shower and then 20 minutes after the shower. And if you do that, you're going to notice a pretty significant drop in mold growth and spreading.
You also write that bleach is not the right product for getting rid of mold. What would you use instead?
Any type of product that has bleach, that has mold killer in it, right? You want to try to kill it as much as you can, and using it 3 to 5 times a week is good. Vinegar is another one. If we're looking for a low cost solution, vinegar is actually a lot better than bleach. Bleach, can it kill the mold? Yeah, but it's hard to actually get to the source of it. You have to go through drywall and paint and plaster and then go to the back of it, and that can be really difficult. You're not really solving the problem. What we want is to try to keep the spread of it down as renters and try to make sure that it's not going to get into the air. So getting vinegar can actually neutralize the components of the bacteria and the mold and can actually help us from keeping it out in the air and stuff. So do that and then use a dehumidifier on top of that. And within 3 to 4 weeks, you'll start seeing results.
Ooh, and that distilled white vinegar. I'm loving it on shower doors to get rid of all of the that sediment that builds up. It is fabulous.
Yeah, the white vinegar is a savior. We honestly, like when it comes to repairs, I always kept a little bit of a bottle with me in my bag all the time because you could use it for so much different stuff.
Well, let's bring in Nancy now in Milwaukee. Nancy, what's going on?
I live in a duplex. I have lived here for 47 years, and both the upper and lower apartment doors were put on wrong. They open outward instead of inward. This is actually a very unsafe situation because anybody trying to get and successfully getting in from the outside could just easily take these doors off their hinges and get into the apartments. So I am lately deciding to call in a handyman to take the doors down and reposition them so that they open the correct way, which is what should have been done to begin with. So my question is, can a average handyman do that, or should I call a carpenter who has gone through a carpenter's apprenticeship program?
Such a good question, Nancy. I will say right out of the gate that it all depends on how everything is structured. I would say that we could do that stuff pretty easily as maintenance technicians. Most of the time, it was a couple hours job, but we could do the job. As far as is it possible in this situation, without me looking at it, I couldn't tell you definitively if it is going to be one that we could do without having a carpenter intervention. But it can be something that can be done if it's the right kind of frame. If it's an exterior door, chances are it will be a much more difficult route, and you may need a carpenter to kind of help this project along and get some people who do door hanging professionally every day rather than just a technician who does it once in a while.
Mercury Stardust, professional home maintenance technician in Wisconsin, fielding your questions on home repair projects and things you want to fix to make your space more livable. Call in to find out if Mercury can troubleshoot at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Wisconsin-based professional maintenance technician Mercury Stardust as our guide to home projects and repairs. New guidebook is called Safe and Sound, and it includes step-by-step instructions on how to fix dozens of home maintenance issues. You can call in with yours. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Okay, Mercury, we're going to turn our attention to garbage disposals that you call not magical go-away machines. Where does the food go in the disposal?
Once it goes down into the disposal, it gets eat up by a dinosaur. No, it gets all chumped up real small and tiny, and then it goes down into our sewage waste system. And that's actually a really good segue to how we should remember that just putting anything down in a garbage disposal isn't a great idea. And that remember that all because you can put it down there doesn't mean you should. And that we should be mindful of our local communities and try to make sure we prevent of a larger sewage issue. Our infrastructure system in the country is getting quite old. And as we have read probably many articles across the country for the last several years, a lot of these infrastructures are not able to handle the high income of sewage or traffic. And it's important that we're doing our part to make sure that we're not adding to a larger issue that may be developing, especially when it comes to those darn flushable wipes. Oh, because it says flushable wipes does not mean you should flush the wipes.
So when you talk about our infrastructure across the country, it reminds me that you've just seen the country. You were on this 54-city book tour. What was one of your favorite moments or interactions on the tour?
Meeting trans kids across the country was something that is so special that I can't put into words. As as someone who is considered an elder in the trans community, which makes me just shake my head for so many reasons. But as someone who is a role model for kids now within my own trans community, it has been a beautiful thing to watch. Seeing trans kids see an adult who is successful and a number one New York Times best-selling author is so rare. 0.01 authors will achieve something like that. And I'm so lucky and privileged to be in that position to be able to show kids that we can be who we are and also do the things we want to do. I met an amazing kid in Columbia, Ohio, who wanted to be like an astrophysicist, and they were only 11 years old, and they knew more about science than I think I have ever heard in my entire life. And these are amazing, extraordinary kids with amazing, extraordinary parents who are willing to do anything for them. And I think that seeing this many people across the country with that many cities was just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I'm so thankful I got to go on it.
Have you been changed by that, by these experiences?
Yeah. I think that for a long time online, I felt like this was a burden. I don't really necessarily like being in the public eye. But when I see the good that we're able to do by having the discussions like we're having today, and I see the good that we're doing by raising, you know, like $2 million for gender-affirming care like we did last year by using my platform, we're helping and changing lives long beyond my lifetime. We're going to be helping people for a long time because of the words that I'm sharing, the inspiration that we're giving, and the hope that we're instilling into our youth. And I get to see that right in front of me now when I traveled around the country. And I don't think you can be the same person when you come back from something like that. You have to be mindful of how impactful you are. And that means we're kind of playing the long game and making sure that I'm going to be here doing the things I'm doing for the next 30 years.
And meanwhile, also, you know, trying to figure out all the tools in the toolbox. I mean, you know, being a maintenance
yeah.
technician, things are always changing. You're always feeling like you're just trying
yeah.
to keep up. Is that challenging?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. I mean, you know, it's I always talk about the duality of what my job is, right? My job is part activism and about advocacy for renters and also my own trans community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another part of it is making sure that I know what miter saws are on the market. that dichotomy is so funny, you know? Like, I'll be sitting here one day making a table saw, miter saw combination table, and the next day I am, you know, talking with, you know, a lawyer about advocacy for, you know, a small community.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting kind of where I find myself, and trying to remember that I can't be everything for everybody, but I can be everything for individuals. And that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to help as many people as I can individually.
Mm.
And
well,
I think that goes in solving larger problems.
Well, here comes Adam and Nina with a quick question. Oh. Adam, hi.
Hello.
What would you like to ask?
Well, I had a question. Kind of a longer story, but I'll try to keep it short. Basically, New Year's Eve morning, early hours, our carbon monoxide detector, we currently rent a single-family home. And at early morning on New Year's Eve, our carbon monoxide detectors went out. Everyone got out safe. Fire department came. And they said that what happened was that the previous night we have a wood-burning fireplace in our living room, and we had a fire the previous day, and I let it smolder like normal overnight to go out. And they said when the heat kicked on in the morning, that the cold air returns basically reversed the flow of the chimney and sucked into the house. So they said to vent out the house, everyone, and that was what was causing it. It wasn't the furnace or anything.
Okay.
Like that.
And Adam, I'm so sorry to cut you short here. A carbon monoxide detectors, mercury, any advice there?
I'm making sure that we have them in the right locations is actually kind of a lifesaver too. You know, what Adam was just talking about is a really good reasoning why we should have multiple throughout the home, especially when we're dealing with ones that have chimneys.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's a really good, important contribution of the conversation itself, making sure we have them and making sure we're checking them. They all have testers. We should be testing them a couple times a year, too minimal, I would say. Same thing with fire alarms, too. And we should understand that smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors are not the same thing. And we should be mindful of that as well.
Mercury, such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Oh, Mercury Stardust, author of Safe and Sound, A Renter-Friendly Guide to Home Repair. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.